That could have been made a lot more clear.
Ivy Tech, yeah.
Not just under more info.
As a former Ivy Tech student who had to navigate self over the portals.
Yeah.
Rough. They clearly don't have a design book for their overall thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, yeah, that's one thing, and that's fine. I get annoyed at my day job stuff with folks that are blaming the website is not clearly da-da-da, and I didn't get instructions for this, and I went to my team management, and I was just like, okay, this is the common complaint I keep getting, and I'm going to keep putting in these complaint tickets,
because
that's what I'm supposed to do. Is there actually a problem? And it's like, no, it's just grown-ass adults that just re-fuck they literally, it's like you get the flat pack of IKEA furniture, throw the instructions away, and then are mad at the furniture's piece of shit. And I'm like, we sent you the directions 5 fucking times.
Yeah, but I do like to try to put together IKEA furniture.
Yeah,
myself.
That's fine, but if you fucked up, you had the sense to like...
Wait, where'd the instructions go?
Get the instructions out of the trash.
Yeah.
And you also, if you fucked it up, would be like, well, I fucked this up, instead of... calling somebody and then yelling at them about how the government fucked up, and you're just like,
I mean, yes,
sir, you are the government.
You could easily fix this.
And there's like, well, if it wasn't for Obamacare, and I'm like, I don't think Obamacare has anything to do with the fact that you can't read.
Thank you, Mr. CIA.
No, it's fine. Look, the exciting thing is, I don't know. I had a thought and just fucking. I have a
sad little story.
Yes.
It's not really that sad, but it's a little bit sad. So a couple of my friends recently started a business of clearing out houses.
Yeah.
Like, it'll be clean out my house or help me organize, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And they're doing pretty well.
Oh,
but
how much do they charge for that, I wonder? I assume they'd have to come and give an estimate depending on what needs done.
Exactly.
Okay, that's
great. They give estimates, and then I think they do it by, like, they try to essentially guess how many hours it would take them.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then go from there.
Okay, interesting. That's not terrible.
I think. I don't know. I did have one of their business cards, but I gave them all away, or I'd give you one. Anyway, so one of the houses they cleaned out, this lady I wouldn't say was a hoarder, because things seemed to be mostly organized, and then they just had them torn apart to organize things better.
Yeah.
There was a pile of clothing that was completely unworn that was like probably about as high as a door frame.
Damn.
And took up like a whole corner of the living room.
Damn.
Yeah, and we started feeling real bad, just being like, do we just have to throw all this shit away? That's awful. No, we'll just give it to Goodwill.
Okay, that's not
terrible. Well, we don't want to give it to Goodwill. And then we started finding all these backpacks.
Mm-hmm.
And so we started making little kits and to give to people
that are in need.
And recently, there's a couple places near my place that I think there's a couple camps.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a path. And so sometimes I'll take a backpack and I'll just tape to a little sign that says, you know, free, warm, and toiletries and stick it on there. And they are always gone. Like, sometimes before I even get back from the walk.
Damn.
Good. But yeah, it's like last week, I think. Yeah, last week I'm walking the dogs and I look over and I see a fire or I see smoke. And I'm like, huh, that's in a woodsy. Okay, I see. There's a tent next to it. And I was like, okay, cool. Finish the dog. Walk with Nago. Go get Nyx. Grab a backpack. Walk over. On the way back, I walk into the woods, and it's across the little shit creek, the sewer runoff creek. And
Fecal Creek.
Huh?
We call it Fecal Creek.
Fecal Creek?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't know that Shit Creek and Fecal Creek, do you think they converge onto Pooh River?
Yeah.
That's just the White River. I'm standing on one side of this little beach of Shit Creek there.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, hey, you in the tent with the fire. Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I have this backpack. It's got some warm clothes. It's got some toiletries in it. Do you want it? Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I stand there quietly for a little bit until I start to feel a little bit awkward because I had to tie Nyx to a tree a little bit higher because it's like a slope.
Yeah, and you're just like, I'm not bringing your shit brick house of a dog.
Yeah, no.
Down this ravine.
Awful, awful idea. She's almost killed me on a ravine once. Not going to give her a second shot. So I tied her to a tree and she's starting to whine. So I'm starting to feel a little bit awkward and I go, okay. So I just chuck it as hard as I can, try to get it into the camp.
Mm-hmm.
I was not able to chuck it hard enough. Instead, it hit on the other side on the embankment and rolled down the hill.
No!
And landed like 2 feet away from the creek.
Oh,
it got caught
God.
Up on a
like a stick or something?
No, a shopping cart that somebody had left.
Oh, thank God.
Don't thank God quite yet. So I was like, all right, well, hey, it's down here by the shopping cart if you want it. Thinking if they're asleep, then they'll probably notice that there's a backpack down there, right?
Yeah.
They did not. It was there the next day.
Oh, no.
And the next day.
Oh, no.
And then it rained really hard. And now it's not there. And I'm trying to figure out where the backpack went.
Oh, damn.
Is it down Shit Creek or did they get it? I don't know.
Someone probably took it either way eventually.
Hopefully. Yeah. Hopefully. It had like a real fuzzy warm hoodie. It had some like wooden sporks that I figure like if you're out there camping and you need fire, you can eat with it and then burn it. And then you don't have to worry about raccoons and stuff. Anyway, had some soaps, had some napkins that were in like plastic wrap. I mean, it was a good little kit. Yay. Had a toothbrush, some toothpaste.
Hell yeah.
Some of them had tampons. I don't remember which ones did. So I hope that the ones that did were ladies that picked those up. And if not, the dudes that picked them up knew some ladies that could use them.
Yeah, they're like, their tent has a little menstruation station in it now.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
That'd be great. Love it. But yeah, anyway, I might have accidentally sacrificed a bag of a hoodie and some toiletries to a poop river.
I mean, you were trying to do a good homie thing, so like that's fantastic.
I guess that's fair.
Sometimes the poop river needs a little treat too.
Yeah, I guess that is true. And I mean, I don't know that I want the blessings of, of Shit Creek. But last
too late.
Yeah, last time too I late. Last time I accidentally sacrificed something to a river, I got some pretty cool stuff out of it. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll talk about what that Pooh River blessing does to you a bit more next month. But first of all, hi and welcome to Blank Body. It's a Vampire the Masquerade V5 tabletop and horror podcast. I'm your host, Hunter, and as always, I'm joined by...
What, next month? What are we covering next month that... Never mind. I'm John.
This is Sarah. Hi. We are...
I'm afraid.
No, it's fine. It's fine. Look, you know what's happening next month.
Oh.
I guess we should make the official announcement. Yes. Now that we're on our last episode of Salubri Month, next month is going to be Werewolf Month. Yeah, to help Sarah out while doing finals and stuff, we swapped. So you've probably heard the patron episode that she did, or will be if you're a patron. And then I'm doing the regular episodes.
Yeah, and I'll also be doing the Patreon episode
this month
during Wolf Month.
Wolf Month.
Wolf.
I think the poll's done, but I'm not going to look at it on my phone right now.
Yeah, that's a problem for future folks. I'm curious what people voted on. I thought I picked a pretty good spread of topics, so we'll see.
There's a pretty clear winner early on, but our polls tend to swing right at the end. So
yeah, unfortunately, somebody makes a ha-ha and everybody goes like, but I can vote for the joke. And I'm like, yeah, that's valid.
We have discovered that our entire community is meme.
They
they just love it.
Throw their whole bagussi into the joke, and I'm here for it.
Little tricksters.
Little guys.
Exactly what
little
we
guys
want.
Guys, gals, non-binary pills.
Y'all are beautiful.
For Salubri Bonus Month, as I've said several times, we're going to be talking about the Third Eye issue stuff with Salubri. I'm going to be talking a bit more in depth of how the disciplines worked in previous editions, and hopefully that'll give some more context for people in V5 that want to play Salubri to understand why the amalgams are the way they are, slash if you want to pull on old material to build new Salubris and kind of figure out how you want to build things, etc. Gonna be talking about how the clan bane in V5 had come from the old discipline and how that's kind of changed over time. Some cultural notes on possible origin of why the fuck a third eye thing. And then we're also going to be talking about Orientalism.
Here we go.
Because unfortunately, Salubri Month also happened when Dune dropped. So I pivoted this entire bonus episode to be like, okay, we have to talk about this now. It's relevant. Hooray. So here we are. Content warning, there will be discussions of some body horror, some religious themes and traumas, as well as colonialism and racism, because that's how Orientalism works. Woo.
It is.
It be like that.
It do.
Our sources are the V5 Player's Guide, the 20th Anniversary Vampire Core Book, 20th Anniversary Dark Ages Core Book, Clan Book Salubri, Orientalism by Edward Said, The Purpose of the Bindi by Shavi Jha. And I wanted to give a shout out to Christian Divine on TikTok. He does a lot of media literacy postings, and he did a video about Dune and Orientalism that kind of kicked my idea to pivot the entire bonus episode. So check out his stuff. It is cool and good. And I'm also giving a small shout out to Theory and Philosophy podcast, because I listened to their critique of Orientalism after I listened to the entire book. I'll tell you, trying to absorb an audiobook that normally takes 10 hours at double speed, don't do that to yourself. Not gonna recommend it.
You know, I don't think I've ever had the temptation.
Yeah, but the Theory and Philosophy podcast is neat and cool and has been helpful for giving some context on things, so
yeah,
check them out when you want. All right, so beginning. The discipline for salubri in old times.
Valorian.
Valorian. So this discipline emerged after Sawalot returned back from the east. So this is not a thing that they've always had. So
what did they have in place of it?
I should have checked that.
Okay.
I don't remember.
That's fine. Somebody hit us up.
Yeah. I am certain that because there are classical era vampire story and game things, there was probably some ancient or classic era salubri stats somewhere. I did not pull that up for this.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
That was my bad. But they would at least have had auspex and fortitude.
Yeah.
So what I'm looking here is it looks like they likely had auspex, fortitude, and obfuscate are the
Valerian.
Well, those are the three standards that they could have.
Is that from B5? Different?
No, that's from Dark Ages.
Dark Ages, okay.
So in Dark Ages, we'll get into it more, but there are different types of salubri, and they had different disciplines. And in Dark Ages, they all had auspex and fortitude, except one group who we'll talk about who had auspex and obfuscate. So I would guess that before Valerian came around, they had those three.
Mm.
And Valerian replaced obfuscate, but maybe. I don't think it actually specifically says that, at least it might say in a book, but from what I'm seeing.
As usual, just covered in mystery.
Right. So, Valerian, big thing in the Dark Ages, this discipline basically split into three paths, and it kind of tracked depending on which salubri bloodline variant you were with. So if you're part of the healer's cast, the way Valerian worked for you would do things like healing, soothing emotions and things, helping people with sleep. You could create shields. You can heal stress and mental health. This does involve consuming a portion of the vampire's soul, but, you know.
You hold up. You said create shields? Yeah. Like force field style?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, your eye would glow with, like, radiant light whilst it was happening.
Hell yeah.
Just metal as fuck.
Yeah, that is metal as fuck.
A lot of this clan is just metal as fuck. But with the healing with stress and mental health stuff, it did remove dementations, and you could, for a night, knock a Malkavian down to none, but it couldn't be like a permanent thing.
Yeah.
But for like the night, you could just be like, and you're cool. And they're just like,
whoa.
Holy shit.
So there is absolutely a Malkavian and a Salubri in a cave somewhere. Mm-hmm. I'm going to fix you. Look at it. I did it. And then the next day, they're like, fuck.
You just got to do it again.
Yep.
Yeah.
You didn't fix me. You made things worse. I can't hear my friends.
I have a different dementation now. Fuck.
Now I got to get used to this.
Fuck. Like, I had the OCD under wraps, but now I've got whatever the fuck this is.
I don't even know. I gotta go figure it out.
I guess borderline personality? I don't know. But yeah, the top, the big boy, multi-passed 5 dots. I think this is getting close to 10 dots. Essentially, the way the discipline is described, and the only way I can make it make any sense quickly, is it's basically bardic healing. Like, they can play music and heal people in a certain area with that. And I'm like, this is bananas.
I like the idea of a, is it based on like how well they do on their performance check?
It's a component of it, yeah.
Okay, I was gonna say, I think it'd be really funny if they were just really fucking awful at music. They just pick up an instrument and start blamp 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 blamp, and then people start healing
because they're powered by Jesus.
Exactly. The toreador is taking will damage because the pain of the bad music, but they're also healing healed. Physically damage.
Yeah, so it's interesting. So I guess if you wanted to build a healer bard in salubri, there's canonical material for it, so that's fun. So for the warriors, you have things like detecting disease. You could just put people unconscious.
Hell yeah.
It's like a sleep spell.
Yeah, basically. There's a couple of different variants of this ability, but the best way I can explain it is just the Gong Jabbar touch. The warriors had an ability where they could touch somebody and they would just be racked with pain.
Oh. Touch of death.
Yeah.
The lesser version is not to death. It just sucks.
Oh, okay.
And then the other one is some, yeah, it's more intense. But yeah, there's a couple of different variants of just Gong Jabbar touch. You also could have magic armor.
Damn.
That's also, it's kind of force fieldy. It's like mage armor.
Cool. Do their eyes glow all pretty well style?
Yeah, pretty much the glowing happens every time they use this discipline.
Okay, for some reason I thought this one was the one they use it and their eyes bleed.
I think that's more of a V5.
That's more thing. Of a V5 thing.
I think okay. If you wanted to, as long as you suffer the same sort of penalty, I think you could allow their eyes to glow instead of bleed without any real mechanical change there.
I mean, other than the bleeding would leave you open to being snacked upon by cohorts that might have hunger frenzy problems.
Yeah.
You know.
That's fair.
That's also a vibe check at your table.
Mm-hmm.
So,
if you're just straight up making the kind of table's like, we're not going to eat each other or deal with that, then I think just that wouldn't make a difference.
Oh, but yeah. That would be a good alternative.
Yeah.
But yeah. Other things the warriors could do is basically the Paladin Lay on Hands ability. I wrote Hyperspeed, but it's basically Valerian Celerity.
Okay.
But it's only like one ability as opposed to a whole tree of feats.
Mm-hmm. And theirs was more combat focused, mm-hmm. wasn't it?
Yep.
Whereas, yeah.
So it's like the 4 and 5 dot
mm-hmm.
celerity where it's like you hit if you throw something at it or yeah, you basically. Hit if you're attacking. Okay.
Yeah. And then they also have an ability that lets them fight the incorporeal, which is a huge thing because normally if it's incorporeal, you're fucked in World of Darkness.
So they're just fighting ghosts.
Fighting ghosts, fighting demons.
Hell yeah.
Dude. Okay. All right.
Yes.
A Salubri's just in a field swinging a sword frantically.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, what the fuck is this guy doing? Whatever, man. Drive off. Shoots to him. And there's just ghosts everywhere.
That only he can see.
Yeah.
Like, the Giovanni attack.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Like, you know when your cat runs into a room, looks panicked, and then stares at a corner?
Yeah. That's the Salubri. But with a sword. What the fuck is this doing?
And then the highest level thing the warriors can do is it's literally just a battle bard. They're singing into combat, and does it
buff other players?
Yeah.
Buffs allies.
Buffs them. Just reading through it, you're just like, this is insane. But it's also a 10 dot.
So it's like
the elders do this shit, but it's just its own album cover.
All of that also explains a lot more why a lot of those other clans wanted them around.
Mm-hmm.
And we're willing to help. I think more than just they know some things.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, wait, no, they're just like the ultimate medieval warriors, basically.
So, question about that power and the bardic stuff that they have here. Do you think it would work on things that are not so smart, like a Vosd?
It would depend.
Because a lot of those are just broken. They're essentially a meat puppet.
The music thing for them is that the whole trope of like music soothes the savage beast.
And right.
That's the fluff reason why mm-hmm. this is a thing. And there is a tradition within the Salubri of being into music as a kind of like communal and healing thing.
See it.
Which is fine. I would say maybe I'm mostly basing this as a storyteller on the fact that birds dance. Birds fucking love tunes. It's great.
See, I was thinking if you're going to try and make something like this for V5 work, mm-hmm. you would have to bump it down from what's the equivalent of a 10 dot to a 5 dot. Mm-hmm. I think a good starting point would be what you say is like the music soothes the beast.
Yeah.
I would first dot make it, oh, wait, well, this doesn't do anything to anything that does not have its own beast. So unless it is a vampire,
yeah,
it probably wouldn't affect it or it would have a much lessened effect.
It's like
kind of the opposite of most vampire powers where it's like
a target.
Yeah.
Instead of the field.
Or there's a lot of vampire powers that are like, this just works on humans. Roll for vampires. I would almost do the opposite of this, where it's like, this specifically targets vampires. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, maybe you can still roll for it. Mm-hmm. But it'd be like, humans are just like, that's a cool tune.
Yeah.
Or maybe it'd be like at a penalty for things that don't have beasts.
Yeah.
You know, like, you get a, well, it's pluses always in this, isn't it now? You'll get minuses. So it's like a,
you can do minuses.
Cool. It's like a -2 to humans.
Yeah. And then you get to decide what it does to werewolves.
I'd count it for werewolves.
Yeah. They are beast.
Yeah. Mages,
Yeah.
Mages, I think, might be kind of up in the air.
Yeah.
Mages, I probably would have it affect the same as humans.
Yeah.
Because they literally are humans who just know a little bit more.
Yeah.
They know the secrets.
And then changelings, it's like they're going to dance regardless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, are you really affecting them?
Maybe
that's gonna be a roll behind the DM screen. I'm gonna tell this. I'm like,
demons, like, you don't want to be in a situation to find out.
No, if you're at a point in the game where a demon has shown up
and you're
fucked up
and your plan is to sing to it, like,
Hey, maybe.
Maybe.
If everyone in your party is salubri and... I'm just saying.
Wasn't Lucifer a musician?
I'm just saying. You could do an Oops All Salubri game, but the plot is basically just Tenacious D and the Pick of Destiny. It canonically works. There's nothing stopping you.
I want to leave.
I respect that. Okay, so the third track is The Watchers. Their track is very different. It's interesting. So you could do things like see omens, because what they're doing instead of being able to see and connect with the physical body and the soul within a body, it's kind of looking at the energy flows around in the universe. So they're just kind of more insightful and observant.
Mm.
But, you know, just having your one dot just being like, I see portents.
That's cool.
Foul play. It's really cool, but it's also just like, man.
Pretty...
You're just the plot hook machine for the game.
Yeah.
At this point. And they also have things where they can just pacify enemies. Yeah, their ability is just like you're calm. It's a lot of Jedi mind tricks. Yeah. And then they're just like, yeah, I guess I am calm. It's like, I didn't want to sit down, but I guess I'm sitting.
One colorless, one yellow. Or yeah. White, pardon me. Pacify.
Yeah, and do things like redirect enemies where, yeah, if people are aggro at you, you can just deflect that energy so they're aggro at somebody else instead.
That's hilarious.
You can also just remove people's angers.
That sounds about right for them.
Yeah. You can also feed at a distance.
Get their blood?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like that,
Yeah, so there's the blood sorcery.
There's the blood sorcery, and then there's also the power in the, Anarchs, Camarilla, and Sabbat. In the Sabbat mm-hmm. book, there's an ability where you can just suck all the blood out of a room, basically.
Yeah, this is a less intense version of that because it's just one person and you're just from a distance, like, taking a little.
Hmm.
But you can get up to, like, X amount of, like, blood points at a distance, and the other party has to roll to figure out that it's you, which I'm like, that's freaky.
Yeah.
That is weird that that's an old world, because you'd have to compare that also to their old Clanbane, where if they fed from someone who wasn't a willing target giver of the blood, you would take one damage for every blood point you slaked, mm-hmm. and you could only heal that damage with blood.
Yeah.
So doing that power, like, almost guarantees you to take damage.
Yeah, there's also... meta plot-wise, it's interesting, because it seems like with Salok going to the east and having this line of the Wu Zhao, the Watchers, it's just like, did he change his morals? Mm. They're just being like, hey guys, that don't worry about that role. We do that at mom's house. So there's that. Other things they can do is basically the equivalent of Assassin's Creed blending in, because you're just using the energies around you just to be like, I'm just a little guy.
So it's closer to what the Obfuscate does now, how that works.
Yeah, except it's like people could see you, they just don't pick you up as a threat or see you as somebody notable, so their brain just kind of deletes it.
So like Mask of a Thousand Faces almost.
Kinda, yeah.
Yeah.
So like, it's not changing the way you look as much as nerfing the way you look.
It doesn't change the way you look at all. It's literally...
Your brain just doesn't think you're worth remembering.
Yeah.
Right.
They're just like, yeah, I walk through a crowd.
Whereas Mask of a Thousand does the opposite, where it makes you look like the most average person for the situation,
No, because here's the thing with Obfuscate. It doesn't actually change you.
It changes the way people perceive you.
Right.
Yeah, yeah,
right.
That's what I was saying.
That's what I was getting at.
Yeah, it's just the way it changes the perception isn't... So with a Thousand Faces, the perception is changing how you visually look.
Yeah, but it wouldn't change on like a camera.
Yeah, yeah.
Unless you have Ghost Machine.
Yeah, unless you have Ghost Machine. For this, it's not changing the way you would be perceived, as in, like, changing the way you would look to another person. It is just, you are not notable.
Yeah.
So, okay. Yeah, you just...
Well, I guess what I was saying, functionally it does the same thing.
Okay.
Is, it just blends in with the crowd.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's very annoying where it's those, like, technically... But essentially, it's the same. Yeah, it's wonky like that. You can also just do exorcisms with this, which is kind of neat.
So this is like the anti-Giovanni clan.
Yeah, basically. And then their top tier thing is you can make somebody do a Freaky Friday.
Holy shit.
Yeah, it's crazy. You could...
For how long? Just the evening?
No.
You just for good?
Yeah.
Until you decide to switch back.
Yeah, you could just swap people's souls, or you can just like take somebody's soul out of their body, that you just be like, you're free now.
Hmm.
So you could make ghosts.
Yep.
Be like, you're a ghost now.
Yep. Or, you know, help a ghost go into a body. Yeah, they're 10 dot. Like, the scaling on the Watcher stuff is bananas. this. Because it's like, okay, this is some cool, like, you can do some really cool, like, spy versus spy kind of nifty stuff. And then you get to their 10 dot and it's just like, yeah, you're just ripping souls out of people's bodies and just kind of putting it where you want. And I'm like, that's insane.
Hmm.
So that was the Dark Ages Valyrian. Sorry, just watching John process that is fantastic.
I'm just thinking of all the weird things you could do with it.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Like, do they have to be, what are the restrictions on that? Do you remember?
I don't remember. I was just trying to give, like, a brief overview. Right. This is literally Dark Ages 20th edition.
That's fine.
Y'all are smart. You can just
I might be able to go find it in the book I have.
That feels to me just like a NPC power, if you know what I mean, where it's like, that's what your big bad is doing. I don't know if I'd let a player just wander around and
I feel like what I would do is I would give like a relatively big or a hefty like oomph to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're doing that, sure, but if you're doing it against someone's will, that is incredibly inhumane. Yeah, so you're going to be taking, like in V5, you'd be taking stains.
You'd be taking
out the fucking wazoo.
Stains, I feel like it would be, even against like a human, there'd be a contested roll you'd have to make.
Mm-hmm.
There's like contested rolls and a bunch, like it's like almost a page of just caveats and complications and things to be aware of. And I was just like, that's a lot. I'm not going to write this in this episode because that's crazy. But that is a thing that can happen. It is the 10 dot, which is like they say elder, but this is Dark Ages elder, so it's like almost a Methuselah. Like, this is bananas. Bananas power scaling.
Do they have to be in visual? Do they have to be in sight is my big question. Because if they don't...
I believe they do.
They have to. They've got to. Because if they don't, you could totally be like, hey, my human friend who's about to die, like, in the process of dying at this very moment, you want to be a vampire but not be embraced? Sure. Okay, this guy I don't like. Soul in dying human in eternal vampire.
I mean, the world, the and then of darkness is a little
dead.
World of darkness is a little wibbly, so like, eh.
That's wild.
It definitely feels like big bad activities, though, where it's just like a place like, what's going on with all these ghosts?
Mm-hmm.
Why does my aspect say that George is a different person, but he's still George, as far as we can tell? Something's going on.
Yeah, it does allow for some very extreme espionage, essentially, because if you have willing participants, you can just, like, swap them.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you have somebody that needs to do a spy mission, and then they're like, I need a body.
Yeah.
And then that other person's not willing, you can still do the force swap and then swap.
Like, yeah.
It's crazy, but it's also a 10 dot, which is basically God tier.
Okay, one last thing on this, then I promise I can move on. Why did they write this power? Salat wants to ascend the human condition. He should have like 19 dots in this. Why can't he just swap his soul into a human? Boop! He's past the vampiric condition now.
That's okay. In reading a lot of this stuff, when you become a vampire, the vampiric condition is not just tied to your body. It's also a soul thing.
Right.
Because there's the other Valyrian powers when they're talking about like soothing the beast, like the one that the healers have, they do that by consuming part of the person's soul, and the part of the soul that they're consuming is the beast portion. So if the person they're trying to help is at humanity zero, the power won't work because there's no humanity left. It's all beast, so there's nothing to save.
And I know there's a lot of talk just in becoming a vampire period that like half your soul dies. It's referenced that way.
Yeah.
So I think even like a high humanity vampire would be like half what remains of their human soul, half been corrupted or taken over or replaced by the beast. So they're even like a 10 dot is like half and half.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So they're already like half a soul you're trying to transfer, which you could just say, well, that just wouldn't work. You could say it has to go into a vessel that's already built for half a soul. There's the question of, would the beast part of the soul destroy the human body, or would it just turn you into a new vampire? Like,
right.
There's a lot of complications that you could bring up if someone in your party decides to start fucking around with that.
Yeah.
Or if a villain starts trying to fuck around with that in your city.
Yeah. Right. Because there's, you can get into like secular, like scientific things with this, but because the vampire curse is so wrapped in religious stuff, there is the kind of esoteric components of it where you could technically do that, but you'd still just revert anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's the portion of it that he's trying to overcome. And he's just like, I'll figure it out. I'll do the thing.
That's fair.
So the answer to that is there's not really a good one. Mm-hmm. And for some chronicles, that's the entire crux of the theme of the game. So I don't have a great meta plot answer outside of just the plot says no.
Right. It just doesn't, it made me feel silly. Because if it's, especially if it's a permanent condition, then like you can live out your days as a human at least. Go outside, whatever.
Yeah. No, no, dude. I would say explore that at your own peril.
Yeah.
That's what that is. I did want to note Clanbook Salubri has extra powers for Valerian if you want to explore that, but none of it was so out of pocket compared to everything else we've just talked. I didn't want to list it out and bore you. So there's more there if you want to check it out, but it's just more of the same. So Oba is the modern Valerian over centuries evolves into Oba because as the Salubri die out, people lose knowledge and how to practice things, and Oba's kind of written as just the last vestige of Valerian, and it's mostly with what's left of the warriors, because that's mostly who's left. That's how they describe Oba in the book, which is a little confusing, because all the other stuff that talks about Salubri makes it sound like there's still like a handful of healers floating around. It's very annoying.
Hmm.
So handle that how you will at your table.
It might, again, might just be if you want an NPC who does that, they're now the Salubri who are really rare, because we talked about how they're kind of seem to be popping up in greater numbers now in V5 again.
Yes.
And we talked about some reasons why that might be. But you could also say, oh, the really rare ones are the healers with the Oba.
Yeah.
They're rumored to still exist.
Exactly. So things that Oba could do is diagnosing injuries at a touch. You can do anesthetics, basically lay on hands, create shields, calm mental health issues, basically heal the soul by kicking it out to fix it, but it's also risking your own sanity and soul, because if you fuck up the roll, you could potentially lose your soul while doing the practice.
So you take a section, you go with it, and you shove it back?
Yeah. If you do it successfully, it's fixed, and if you fuck it up, you're gone?
Oh, okay.
Or insane.
Huh. Weird. Wild.
Yeah. You can also create an aura around yourself that makes people think you're not threatening.
Okay, so like the other one.
Yeah, and then you could also just remove the soul from the body entirely. Yeah, Oba seems to slam together all three tracks, and just kind of the more powerful it gets, the more you kind of have Wu Zhao abilities as opposed to the healer and the warrior track.
Right.
Which I'm
like, sure the warrior track, that's super useful.
Super.
He's just like, good. And you don't have a body anymore.
Yeah, it's like,
you're a ghost.
Well, it's just, and I can fight ghosts.
Right.
So while you're trying to figure out what it means to be a ghost, you're now a dead ghost.
Yeah.
Double dead.
You're like, wait a second, huh?
So.
Sword.
So that's the track of how we get into Modern Knights. And along with that track is the issue with the goddamn third eye.
Yeah.
So with Valerian and Oba, you do not inherently get an eye for being a Salubri. You get the third eye for learning Valerian and Oba.
Interesting.
So when you have Dark Ages Valerian, you learn it, you get the eye. It starts off as like a gross like bump and it just becomes it.
Mm-hmm.
So much like how we had joked about the Three Stooges
fighting. Yeah.
Not wrong. Mm-hmm. It was so hard for me to not die laughing during that. In Valerian ages, it specifically states that the eye is like sensitive.
Okay.
So you can't wear headbands or hats directly on it. Otherwise you start taking penalties to rolls because it's so uncomfy.
Huh. Interesting.
Your eye.
It's poking out the front.
Yeah. You basically like don't have an orbital socket to protect the eyes because just like in your forehead.
Yeah.
But you can do a roll, to suck the eye into your head to hide it for a scene.
So like a frog.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I wonder if you could get a, Zamitz to give you an orbital socket.
Probably sure. Could.
Absolutely. And then just choose to never heal it.
Yeah, but then you're also, like, rocking around with an orbital socket in the middle of your forehead plane.
Yeah.
So
you're always wearing beanies and headbands. You never wear not beanies and headbands.
But just the description of the book was so funny. It was just like, yeah, wearing hats and bands and certain kinds of fringes are very irritating. A hood is always acceptable. So which I thought was very funny. Because it's just like, well, it's the Dark Ages. Everybody had that big, like, fat monk hood. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's not the weirdest.
Bangs. Bangs would still work.
That's a fringe.
Oh, yeah. Still.
Well, just imagine having your bangs just constantly curling into your eye all the time.
Don't have short
day.
Bangs.
Just have micro bangs?
Have bangs that come down, like, right past, like, right to your normal eyes. And you can part
then
them
you
a little
can't
bit.
See, I was gonna
and
say, you can then part you them can't a see bit. Out of any of your eyes.
Have swoopy bangs.
Swoopy bangs.
How will they know I have three eyes if they can't see any of them?
Exactly.
Problem solved. Problem
solved. Solved it.
Get wrecked.
Get that that emo swoopy hair.
Yeah, but the roll to hide your eye like a frog was stamina and strength, and it was a difficulty of 5.
Because you had to go.
Yeah, which and you also had to like squish your own eye into like your brain, which is probably very uncomfy, and you're just straining the whole time to keep it there and look chill. Which getting difficulty 5 in old world stuff is
tough.
Can be tough because you had to roll an 8 on the die for it to count as a success.
Yeah.
So statistically, you'd be needing to roll over 10 die to do this regularly.
Yeah.
Oof.
I mean, you could do things to make the difficulty go low. I did not like the old dice system.
Yeah.
Now that we have the hunger system, I look back at the old one and I'm just like, why did we do that? God.
Put it away.
No. So, when we went to Oba in modern times, so old world. Basically, the roughest timeline I can give is Oba ran this way until sometime in the 2000s.
Okay.
Because that's the only kind of way. Because a lot of the V5 stuff has the starts of it kind of in the late 90s. And they've pulled some stuff from the early 90s plot lines, because we talked about that with the Beckoning, because Menelay from Chicago, fucked off in, like, 95. But yeah, so I think around the 2000s is roughly when Oba doesn't really exist and it becomes what the V5 Chronicle is. So up until then, if you practiced Oba, you would grow the third eye, but that would only show up after you've got your second level.
Okay, so you had to take 2 dots before you got an eye.
Yeah, so you could technically be a Salubri with only 1 dot in Oba, and the third eye would never show the fuck up.
Interesting.
Or you could have be a Salubri who's very skilled in Oba and have your third eye and then teach the 1 dot to a fuckload of people. And then they could accidentally, XP themselves into the third eye. And you're just like, oh no, I'm so sorry. Which makes Garatrix getting the third eye in Beck's Jihad Diary terrifying.
Ooh, interesting.
Because you're just like, you know what that man needs? The ability to rip souls out of bodies. On top of everything else, I'm just like...
I mean, that's going to take even him a while, but...
Yeah, but still...
If he just got the eye, he's got, like, 8 more levels to go.
We don't know when he started that. It's just Beckett saw it when he did, I'm going to say, in the 2000s, 90s, 2000s. So we don't know when he started doing that, and we're just like, oh, no.
We don't know when he got the eye?
Yeah, we don't know when he got that second level. We're just like, but he did it.
Huh.
A lot of implications there. So now we get to V5, where the eye is permanent and it is exclusive to Salubri.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you learn Oba, you don't get an eye.
Yeah. So if you...
As another vampire, I mean.
Yeah. So technically Oba and Valerian don't exist in V5.
Yeah.
They're not discipline tracks. You can get the amalgams that are combinations of Auspex and Fortitude and... I'm forgetting the third one. Was it potent? I don't remember. I'm having a day, guys. I'm sorry. But yeah, the amalgams are the various combinations of the 3 disciplines. And those amalgams that we talked about on the first episode are all echoing those 2 previous tracks that used to exist. So it's kind of a interesting implication of just like, is the clan falling apart?
Or is it unifying?
Or is it unifying? But I recopied down the information about the third eye because portion of it is concerning, which is additionally the third eye that Salot opened while on his many journeys passes down through the bloodline every time a Salubri embraces. So lore wise, I'm like, did Salot get up during the Beckett's Jihad Diary book and just make a new bloodline of Salubri?
And that's what we're seeing
and
now.
That's what we're seeing now.
It's his basically his 4th bloodline of vampires.
It's just, oh god, what is the fucking comic book series that's got the like the inhuman superhero guy that's just like beating up his child and is like, what, 17 years? I'll just make another one.
Oh yeah, that one.
Invincible.
Yeah, I was just like, it's just that. it kind of is the feel I get from it. And I'm just like, oh.
We talked about it. He does seemingly have a history of like, I don't like those kids anymore. Other kids kill those kids.
Yeah.
Of his own bloodline. So I would not be surprised, honestly, if he just woke up and was like, well, they're almost all gone anyway. Let's try again.
And he's like, okay, so this Tremere thing is neat. I'm going to fuck with that later. But in the meantime, I have this project I've been sitting on for like 800 years. Because I couldn't leave.
He loves his projects.
Does.
It also just gives me very much the stepfather energy.
He also has kind of a, it seems like he kind of has a little bit of a Toreador thing going on here.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I'm really into this. I could not give a fuck less about this now.
I'm done now.
Yeah.
I guess the Wu Zhao just lucked out because Salok just got busy when he got back home.
Yeah.
And just kind of like, I guess we're just going to keep on trucking.
We're going to be here.
We're going to be over here.
Well, they kind of integrated more into the, we talked about them a little bit more, like the Kindred of the East society than Vampire Society, didn't they?
Yeah, and even then, like, the local population there don't fucking like them because they're just like, God, you're such a problem. You're such a fucking problem every time, and you're gross. You actually drink blood? Gross.
That's true.
We don't like it. So there's that. And with the third eye, I did want to touch on what I think is probably the most likely inspiration for this. And it's the Bindi dot. It also is sometimes referred to as Kumkum, Sindoor, Teep, Tikli, and Batu. Shockingly, India is a large continent with several subcultures that have been existing for thousands and thousands of years, and there is not a homogenous language over the entire continent. So several different people in several different dialects will refer to the exact same fucking thing with different words.
I think it's funny how people feel like that's surprising sometimes, but then like you go to Beech Grove.
Yeah.
And it's like a different language practically.
But just like people commonly...
I'm sorry, Beech Grove is to the south of us by a little bit.
Yeah, by a little bit. But yeah, people commonly expect the different just dialects of speech in the United States.
Right.
Don't think about it. And then they're just like, what? There's more than two languages in India. And I'm like, yeah, India is fucking huge. Like, I'm certain if you just go to different areas of just Bengal, like, or, you know, it's just fucking wet. Anyways.
It's like dudes are dudes everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. So, Bindi Dot is a tradition that goes back, traces to the Vedas, which are a series of sacred texts in Hinduism that trace back to 1500 BCE, and it is some of the oldest holy texts that we just have as a species.
Nice.
All right.
Which is kind of cool. It has been a hot minute since I've read any portions of the Vedas. I'm not an expert on any kind of Indian or Southeast Asian culture, so I'm just hitting some highlights so we all understand what this is. So if I say something wrong, please contact us, and I'll try to rectify it.
Yeah.
Trying to not be out of pocket. So, the rough baby's first understanding of this is... So, the body contains a series of energy centers, and these are called chakras. The ajna, the one where the bindi dot would be, is called also the brow chakra or the third eye chakra. Oh my god.
Wow.
So,
what?
Yeah, the ajna translates roughly to command or perceive in Sanskrit, which is kind of neat. The location of this is supposed to pull for intuition and intellect, and thoughts or images from dreams and the mind's eye are said to come from this place. So if you're kind of daydreaming or like planning things or being creative, that's the portion of your body or your spiritual self that comes from. The dot is supposed to help focus inner wisdom, insight, and to remove the fog of bias. So help you like focus and be on your game and girl boss better.
Yeehaw!
Yeah! And the dot also symbolizes piety and is a focus centering one's thoughts on God. So it, for some people, it's, I would kind of put it in the same vein as like a rosary or a set of like prayer beads, where it's like a, just for some people, it is very, very super spiritual. For some people, it is just a little token to remind them to kind of keep mindfulness. For other people, it's just a cultural decoration. It's got a long and complex history. I'm not going to sit here and act like I have expertise on it, but this is my rough understanding of it.
Mm-hmm.
These dots are typically made of red pigment of some sort, but it can be of multitudes of colors and designs. Sometimes jewels get thrown in. for good or bad, you know, Sometimes it's just purely decorative from people in that culture. Sometimes it's purely decorative from people not in that culture. There's a lot of discussions on it. Some people couldn't give less of a fuck. Some people are super upsetty spaghetti about it.
It's kind of like people aren't a monolith.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. A lot of the discussions I was reading about people's thoughts on non-Hindus wearing bindi dots kind of reminded me of conversations I've had with Catholics on people aestheticizing rosaries, where some Catholics are really upset about it because the rosary is a very spiritual connection for them to practice their faith, and it literally has a depiction of Jesus on it, which also doesn't help. And then other people are just like, I'm glad people just like the aesthetics.
Yeah.
And maybe that'll encourage them to come in. And if not, like, that's okay. So it's that whole spectrum of some people super not into it. Some people could give less of a fuck.
Right.
Who's to say, just be respectful amongst your friends.
And if you have questions, then maybe, like, try to reach out to somebody from that.
Yeah.
You know, culture. And
be like, hey,
see friend. How they're feeling about it. Yeah. If you're not from that culture, then you should probably figure out how they feel first.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, because we do have, I'm going to say it's festival culture people that like to wear culturally significant things from other cultures. And sometimes it's things where people don't give a fuck. And other times it's things like, you know, indigenous war chief headdresses that they super give a fuck about. And they keep telling you they give a fuck. Why are you still doing this?
Yeah.
The fuck?
Yeah, that's not cool.
Yeah.
We know that.
Yeah.
we know that's a problem already.
Yeah.
As like a big overall.
Please do not.
Yeah.
Bindi dot's a little more kind of up in the air because it does have spiritual importance and connections, but there are people that do just wear it for fashion, and then bindi dots are most commonly worn by Hindu and Jain women, and it's often associated with marriage, so there's also the cultural practice of Hindu women who are married wearing the bindi dot, and it's kind of the version of just wearing a wedding ring.
Yeah.
Where they're like, I might not be going to temple or doing festival practices and all that kind of stuff, but this is just what my ancestors have been doing for centuries. So I'm doing it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, So that's the crash course of a bindi dot.
Boom, boom.
So I'm pretty sure, 95% sure, that's where a lot of this bullshit comes from. And there is a lot of other third eye, forehead placement stuff in lots of other Asian cultures. And I had spent a bunch of time writing and researching that, but then Dune dropped and I realized we as a family need to talk about Orientalism. So I pivoted the entire episode to talk about this. Yeah.
It's a big thing of Salubri. So I think it makes sense.
Yeah, it's also kind of, in, you know, media literacy is important. And I know on the show I've joked about Salat being kind of like a white savior, but it's more of a, I don't know, like white dude went to the East to get enlightenment and came back. And depending on which version of Vampire the Masquerade you're dealing with, he does have a very messianic, I save the day. But I appreciate as editions have moved on, they're just kind of like, we're going to make him more complicated than that. And actually, maybe commodifying other people's cultures for personal profit is not good.
I also like that they kind of pushed it into a direction where, to me anyway, it feels like he is a messianic figure still, specifically to the original Salubri. And kind of everyone else over time has been like, actually, he's been up to some fucking shit.
Yeah, just like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I do like the idea of his childer still being like, but dad's great.
Especially
he wouldn't do wrong.
Especially the if you're one of the original Salubri.
Yeah.
Versus either the Wu Zhao or what we now can, or the ones from the well.
The ones
from the well. Or possibly his new fourth children in fifth edition. I do like that. That is such a nice little lore nugget that like, this Salubri is different than that one, and no one knows.
Right. I was just like, yeah, I like that. Just I saw that nugget, and I was like, wait a second. Hold on. Lore implication here is like, guys, I don't think. I think this new crop of Salubri is just a new project, guys. And if I'm proved right with the Gehenna Wars book, all of you owe me a drink.
Because, I mean, other than possibly the ones in the well, all the other Salubri bloodlines were started. Well, before he got the third eye?
Yeah, so the ones in the well are just the Bali, supposedly.
Yeah.
Supposedly, that's what a Bali said to somebody else, and then...
But they might also be something else. We're not sure.
Else entirely. Is there a potentiality that there's just weird failed bloodlines of Salubri that are just Bali-esque.
And technically fifth, because we're forgetting about the barely existing African ones that keep Nakulu to themselves. Yeah, the ones who just kind of, well, don't talk to us. We are failed creatures who are destined for hell. Anyway.
Yeah, and I'm just, those poor people, I'm just like, I don't know if Salah just actually went down to Africa and fucked around because he was just off the records for a hot minute. Or if some of his childhood went to Africa and got in over their head and they just got fucked and they just left childhood behind with no direction and everybody's just like, ah, I guess I live in the woods now. I don't.
Knowing him, they could be all over the world. Just weird little salubri, like a pocket of them somewhere.
Yeah. Just like, I'm just going to leave this one to bake. Burp. Which is horrifying.
Leave this one to bake.
So, Orientalism. This is a very big topic. I tried really hard to parse this down as best I could. If I don't hit a note that you think is important, please let us know. I'm happy to correct. But this is baby's first introduction to this topic. So, we have the Orient, which is basically the social construct of the world, or the chunk of the world that constitutes the East. And then there's also the Occident, which is the social construct of the world that roughly contains the West. Unfortunately, because everything is complicated, there's some bleed areas or some portions of the world that are counted as Western in some context, in other contexts not.
Like Russia.
Yeah, and then there's like even portions of like Greece and Turkey and parts of Eastern Europe.
Yeah, Eastern Europe was originally viewed as
the East.
Or non-white by a lot of Europeans. And over time that's kind of swung.
Yeah, so there's a lot of concept of East and West being separated by the concept of whiteness, but that kind of came about more with an unfortunate period of time where we're all like, hey, let's divide humans by race scientifically. That wasn't a good choice.
It's not good, but no. It is a fair to state that came later, is what I meant to say there.
Yeah, because there was Orientalism before that, but that was Orientalism based around religion?
Huh.
Which is a little more ties into what's going on with the Salubri, I think.
Yeah, because there was, you know, Westerners that were wanting to, you know, champion Christ and God, and those who did not fall in line became the East. And then over time it evolved into, these people are different and lesser than us for reasons that I can note down scientifically. It was bad science and not accurate. So therefore I should be in charge. And then we get, I'll explain a little bit more in a moment. So with the Orient and the Occident, these two large groups are pitted in opposition to each other, with the Orient being characterized as unsavory, barbaric, scheming, exotic, and immature, while the Occident is characterized as aspirational, cultured, proper, familiar, and mature. So, holding up Western values. That's the roughest of it. So, when you get into reading Edward Said's book, which is, it's a really good book, it's very foundational for these concepts, he does focus on what is the Near Orient, so the Middle East, which I think makes sense because he's Arab, because he's Palestinian. That's the context he understands. A lot of these concepts do get picked up by other cultures because they're like, ah, I see the framework of what you're using and it fits for my group. But he did not directly speak on them, or if he did, it was just like a very small touching on it and moving on.
Okay.
So, for those who want to get the book, it was published in 1978, so there might be some sociological, anthropological things that we understand now that just aren't in that text because it's from the fucking 70s.
Yeah. There's it's really a shame that books don't update.
Books can only update as much as the author is alive.
Yeah.
And this guy, I think, died in like 2003. What Said describes as the Orient and the study of the Orient is inherently absurd because the Orient doesn't really exist.
Okay.
So the ideas along with the stereotypes and biases that come along with this have been put in place to undermine the various peoples in the regions that the Orient covers and is used to dismiss their ability to rationalize as part of a colonial power structure to exploit them economically and militarily.
Got it.
So it's a lot easier to rule and take over an area if you treat them like children. Or you just kind of lump this vast swath of people into just like, well, they're just like that.
Mm.
And they don't know what they're doing. We know what we're doing.
Right. Yeah, we got to help them out.
Yes.
And I'm not disagreeing with what he's saying at all. But I do find it interesting that even as a child, when I hear the term Orient, to me, I always considered that like China and maybe Japan and more that part of Asia.
Yeah.
Where like specifically there, like if you go to like the mall or like a strip mall, they'll probably have like an oriental rug store. And by that, they usually mean like Chinese.
Well, no, here's the fun thing with that. So the oriental rugs are usually Persian rugs.
Really? Yeah. But then they sell them as like...
Yeah, so a lot of oriental rugs are Persian, so normally like Iran, that kind of area.
Interesting.
So it's just, it's funny when you see these things. They're like, oh yeah, we're setting up an exotic locale in the Orient, and it'll have a bunch of a weird mishmash of like Chinese and Japanese architecture, and then it'll have a Persian rug, and we're all just supposed to accept that this is all like cohesive. And it's like, these are entirely different regions and cultures and people. And I'm like, if you want to have these things together, like, that's fine. But to act like this is just one homogenous group is weird.
Hmm.
So that's
like, it's like having shamrocks and lederhosen.
Yeah.
And being like, this is Western culture.
Yeah, it's like, I love the West. And it's like having a spaghetti with like a gefilte fish on top of it.
Ugh.
And just being like, this is culture. And you're like, what the fuck?
Even as a Swede, I don't approve.
Is that legal?
That sounds awful.
I know, right? I mean, sometimes having... I don't like that portions of the internet decided that the term cultural appropriation is always bad, because it's technically a neutral term. It's just when one culture picks up things from another culture. That inherently isn't necessarily bad. It is often done badly.
Yeah.
And often done with not good intent. But there's also tons of great cultural exchanges that happen all the time, and to act like cultures don't learn and interpret things from each other is fucking insane. And I don't know how you exist as a person like that, but
you'd have to like wall yourself off from the internet and society, mm-hmm. and only speak to other Irish people or whatever group you're above.
Just like, I can't believe you do cultural appropriation. I'm like, how are you eating a cheeseburger, my guy?
Bro, I made spaghetti last night. Like.
And there's like a fascinating history about spaghetti in the United States because of Italian immigration happening during Reconstruction. And since spaghetti is such a cheap thing, and the Italian communities were not considered white when they moved here, so they just kind of got lumped in with black people. So they just did a bunch of cultural exchanges where African communities were like, hey, we could put like spices and shit in here. Like peppers and shit. And... the Italians are like, but the noodles. And then now we have like the American style like spaghettis that we have.
Yeah.
And lots of black people in the United States like have their own like family recipes for spaghetti and various other like what would normally be an Italian dish,
mm-hmm.
because of that cultural exchange, which I'm like, that's
fucking
sick as fuck.
I mean, that's kind of what Spike Lee's movie Do the Right Thing, mm-hmm. is all about.
Hell yeah.
Mm.
With the construct of colonialism and the Orient and Orientalism, this does include negative thoughts, so bad stereotypes, and this can include like the psychosexual terrorists to like honey money grubbers. A lot of anti-Semitism also kind of falls into some Orientalism, because mm-hmm. depending on how Jewish populations are categorized, sometimes they're not considered white or Western, so they get chunked over here. It's a whole thing. So there's all these negative stereotypes, and then there's ones that are supposed to be positive, but they're not great, which kind of falls into those, like, noble savage stereotypes.
They're, like, good at math.
Yeah, where you're just like, they're just people, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's a lot of Westerners that like to go to portions of the Orient or the East, because they're more spiritual, they're more in touch with nature, and da da da. And a lot of those implications come down to believing that these peoples and communities are less evolved or less like socialized, so because they're closer to nature, they're closer to God, and just this untouched innocence. And I'm like, that's creepy and weird.
Mm-hmm.
Don't.
And it's
do
I think it's extra weird. I mentioned it passingly, mm-hmm. with the Salubri in the earlier episodes, but they do especially have a lot of the like viewed nobility,
mm-hmm.
in their Western and Eastern branches of the family,
mm-hmm.
and so that gets really messy when obviously like the Western branch, it's nobility and their religion and their chasteness, and but then when you start getting into like the nobility of their Eastern branch, it does kind of fall into a lot of those tropes, and so you have to handle that. I think it helps that it is kind of a clan-wide, that's just kind of how people view them, no matter where they're from, but it is something to watch out for.
Right. Well, it also just falls into the base conceit of Sawlot was trying to achieve some form of spiritual reprieve, cleansing, enlightenment, whatever the fuck he's working on. And he feels in some ways that he failed or is not able to obtain this in his home area. So he travels to the Orient seeking this enlightenment. I'm like, that's literally the trope.
Yeah.
That's literally it.
He specifically did it.
He specifically does that.
But I was more talking about just like individual members of the clan. I think that pre or post that happening, that is like a theme of the entire clan. So it's something to keep an eye on. Not just for Sawlot or Sawlot, but anyone.
And it's like, I'm not saying you can't travel to discover yourself or process grief or
learn about other cultures.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with, and I'm super into like learning about other cultures. It's just doing it in a way where it's respecting the autonomy and the humanity of other people as opposed to just doing weird, gross, touristy things.
That, and also
just feeling entitled to certain experiences.
And like you said, don't put people on pedestals. Like, it's just as bad to put a whole culture on a pedestal for a specific thing.
Yeah.
When they're individual people, they're not a monolith to say, oh, I have to go there because they're all so enlightened and intelligent is like just as shitty as if you're going there because you think they have a belief system that would work with you. That's fine. Go and learn it and learn what they're willing to share with you and whatnot. But you can't just be like, oh, I love this group of people. They're all so spiritual.
Yeah.
You can't just get off the plane in Japan and be like, teach me Buddhism to the first person you see.
Right.
It's not going to work.
It's just some guy with like a briefcase just like, I'm going to work.
Yeah. Right.
You're lucky my English is spectacular.
I think the video that really broke a lot of that for me, especially is there's a video of, I feel like a lot of Westerners have a view on Japan and its relation to anime. There's a video of two TV hosts from like popular TV, Japanese, like regular culture. And they're just straight up bullying otaku, like on regular TV. Like, just they go into this guy's house and they're like making fun of him to his face. It's pretty shitty. But it also, like, I've heard so many people like, oh, I should move to Japan. They appreciate people like me. They're like, no, they don't. Most of them probably do not want your weird ass there.
You're going to be just as socially awkward there as you are here.
Except you won't be able to talk to anybody. Which you don't do now anyway. Like, so
did you bother learning any kanji?
Yeah.
Do you understand the Japanese language has several alphabets?
It's kind of almost separate languages.
Yeah. You didn't? Cool.
Well.
Well, good luck, my guy. Hopefully somebody will want to hire you as a tutor to teach their child English. Other than that, I don't know what you're going to do.
But I wish I was a monolith.
You kind of, you're just a
all people
one.
Are a monolith onto themselves. But you, whatever culture that you believe you belong to, is not a monolith.
I gotcha.
But all people are a monolith unto themselves.
I am a monolith.
Yeah.
You're each a monolith to the point of making a forest.
Of monoliths?
Yes.
Multilith.
I just thought of a little pocket dimension for an Unknown Armies game.
Hell yeah.
Forest of monoliths.
Yeah. So the problem with boiling down large areas of cultures that are all very different and have their own unique histories and context and all that shit is you are inherently removing the ability to speak for themselves and control their own autonomies and ways of life of millions of people and replacing that instead with just a Western idea of how these people are, and you're just kind of talking at them or repeating narratives amongst yourselves and not engaging with these people at all, and they're just vibing.
Yeah.
And that's, like, gross and shitty, and maybe don't do that. You know, some thoughts. So, Orientalism itself expresses in various forms, and those forms also depend on the cultural context of the Orientalist involved. So the West itself is also not a monolith, which is also a pain in the ass when you're talking about these things, because, you know, people are like, the West! And I'm like, what the fuck do you mean the West, TM?
Like, again, like we're talking about, you can include Ukraine, Russia. Like, is that to you part of the West or is that to you part of the East? They are like on the dividing line on a map and they have cultural touchstones from both sides.
Where do you put Hungary?
In my stomach.
That's true. When we were talking about Dracula or Nosferatu, again, Transylvania, that was viewed as Eastern. We talked about that in our Nosferatu series. A lot of those places were considered Eastern
European.
But I think most people nowadays would hear Europe and say, oh, that's the West.
Yeah. And like And it does very much tie into just vampire media, because a lot of vampire media that we experience in hashtag the West comes from this fear of the Orient, which for a lot of people for many centuries was just Romania, like the Carpathians, just Greece, big portions of Italy, and things that we today are just like, oh, clearly these are like Caucasians. And I'm like, Caucasians aren't even... A good chunk of the Caucasus are not even what we would consider Europe on a map. Like, it's in Central Asia. So for a lot of folks, if they were to see an actual, like, Caucasian from the Caucasus region, they would not categorize them as white.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's fucking convoluted and annoying. So the three big examples I'm giving for flavors of Orientalism is British Orientalists tended to view the Near Orient, so the Middle East, as an economic pathway to the real interest in India and other parts of Southeast Asia. So their investments was the gold mine of just stripping resources and all sorts of things from those other regions. And the Middle East was just a cool way to get from A to B. So they just couldn't give less of a fuck.
That's kind of what Salah did too. He kind of just blazed through those areas in between and then got to where he was going and was like, hey, teach me.
Hey, do thing. Yeah. There's the French Orientalist that tended to view the Near Orient as a spiritual place due to its perceived closeness to nature with the local population, and often had more drug and sex-fueled vacations and a lot of media based around this region due to French colonies just being in the Middle East. Because they're like, okay, this is the portion of shit we've managed to carve away and control, and then we just have this, like, weird fascination where we're simultaneously exploiting these people and treating them as barbaric and or like hypersexualized, overly sensual people, so I can be a good person in France and then go do a holiday in like Lebanon, Syria, and go a little crazy and then come back home and like I'm not besmirched. Or, you know, they're going to various parts of the Middle East and just being like, oh, look at these the Sufis and all these, like, just a lot of the weird hippie woo-woo shit that, like, folks here in the States put on it to, like, China and India, they put on to people in the Middle East.
So that's more the France is doing.
Yeah, for a hot minute. It's also where a lot of the tropes about, like, harem culture that we get, like, these Western, like, exploitation books and novels about these kinds of things, where it's just like, you're aware of this phenomenon, but you have no understanding of the actual, like, political structure that this was, because a lot of that was very much more Game of Thrones political machinations, as opposed to just, I'm rich, I'm going to have a room full of women, and it's going to be horny, and they're going to be secret lesbians.
Right.
And I'm just like, what the...
Secret, not so secret.
Secret, not so secret. Yeah, it's very just like, what the fuck? Okay. And then we have American Orientalists, and we tend to repeat various narratives about peoples of the Orient in attempts to tell stories about them without actually, like, taking in any information from the actual culture. And this basically ends up spreading and normalizing harmful ideas and, like, cultures of fear around other people.
So essentially we're taking ideas that were put forth by the other two groups and kind of mishmashing them into this new perceived non-existing reality of an East.
Yeah, because fun thing with being an American, we don't touch any of that shit, like, geographically. So for a lot of people in the Americas, our context for things from the Orient is literally just stories. And those who do go over there, statistically more times than not, are going because of a war.
Yeah.
And therefore that increases the desire to have narratives where you're ostracizing and othering these people as, like, enemies in ways that are just like, fuck, like, literal demonization and shit. And it's like, that's just a guy. He just owns a food stall. Like, I don't know why we're doing this shit, but, like, okay.
Yeah, he's upset with you. You just ran over his food stall.
Yeah, you're, like, in his house. Like, quite literally, like, you came to his house. And then are surprised they're pissed. And you're just like, these people, I can't believe they're uncivilized. And I'm like, you are in his house, man. Like, I think he's understandably pissed. But yeah, so there's that. And there's a lot of the American Orientalist stuff is, a lot of our power does unfortunately come from culture and media, which we are also actively participating in. So, you know, woo!
Wait,
yay,
us?
Media.
Yes, media!
Yeah, wait, yeah.
We are the news now, John.
John.
We are the news!
Well, not in that voice, please.
The idea of John cosplaying Alex Jones is very funny, because you could not be any less shaped like him. That so would be pretty overall, funny. It's very funny.
I feel like if we fill him full of whiskey and get him in enough car accidents, he could get there.
Yeah, I just have to try it.
You don't have just the broad "I was a linebacker" shoulders to have the base frame for just that weird physique of a man that looks like somebody took a frog and stood it up and put trousers on, which is very funny considering the memes that he generated.
Yeah, he's kind of got the Frank Reynolds body, but more tall, muscular.
Yeah, but yeah. Taller. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just very like, you look like a background character from King of the Hill, which I know you're from Texas, so it's very on point.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so, it's wonky, yeah, because it's just, once you're kind of aware of these things, particularly understanding the just American, just mega just machines for just creating media and narratives and whatever, it's just hard to not see this shit constantly, and it's just very interesting, because it's just like, all right, there's Aladdin, like, that... Just stripping that down alone is just like, what the fuck? Ugh. It's not, I wouldn't say it's a terrible kids movie, but yeah, it has some.
It's very different than the book it's based on, we'll put that.
Oh yeah, that is true. So.
That's not a children's story.
No.
Or even, what was the D&D setting that was based on, now I'm drawing a blank on the book Aladdin's based off,
1001 Nights?
Yeah, 1001 Nights. I know there's kind of a D&D setting that's based on that. Yeah. That's really interesting, but also is a bit questionable.
A bit questionable.
It's not D&D's worst, I'll say that.
Oh,
but...
no. I'm banking on it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so with dovetailing off of that, so when you're dealing with Orientalist media, the way I've tried to define this or break this down as a concept is... This is essentially taking Eastern concepts, which would be things like philosophy, art, folklore, fashion, etc., and simplifying them down to a narrative, and for narrative purposes, particularly for a Western audience. So it's not a film. Orientalist media does not necessarily mean the media has something that is from a Eastern culture and therefore bad. It is removing the context and the history and the voices of the people from those cultures specifically to use it as decor or decoration or just like a trope for your thing. That's where it becomes a problem.
Yeah.
So like having a character that is wearing a sari or hijab or whatever, like, is not inherently Orientalist. And there's certain things that people are like, this is Orientalist. And I'm like, that's just yellow face. That's just racism. That's not what we're talking about. That's different. That's bad, but that's a completely different problem. So, like, Breakfast at Tiffany's, that's not Orientalist. That's just racism.
Or, no, we don't need to dig into that. But I'll say there was the whole series of detective movies that Universal made where, I can't remember the actors, one of the big Universal horror icons played an Asian detective, and they were pretty rough.
Oh, yeah, stuff like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yes.
That is both... just racist, that's, and also Orientalist.
There's portions of it that are Orientalist, and then there's a lot of it that's just racism. So those are different things, and you can yell at both of them for different fucking reasons.
But they are separate issues, is yes. Guess what I was trying to say.
Ooh, and right. Green Hornet.
Yeah!
With his sidekick, I can't remember his name.
Yeah, oh,
is
fuck.
It Kato?
Yeah, Kato. Yes.
I don't know, I haven't...
Magical martial arts Asian was what he used to be, pretty much.
I haven't interacted with anything Green Hornet related since I was very little, because I had a grandpa who loved radio plays. Mm-hmm. Not Green Hornet in general, but just... would buy, like, the 20-set collections of all the old radio shows, and he would just hang out and listen to those, which, that was cool as hell.
Mm-hmm.
But Green Hornet specifically, I don't have memories of past a child, so I can't actually say much about him as a character.
Green Hornet himself was a white dude,
yeah.
Like Batman style, and then he had the sidekick, Kato, who, like I said, from what I remember olden times, they might have gotten better nowadays, was just like the magical Asian martial arts sidekick.
I mean, Batman is pretty Green Hornet. He basically went over to the Asia, learned how to fight from a bunch of ninjas, and then adopted a child to fight alongside him.
Well, Batman also has a ninja child that he made. Because he fucked one of the ninjas.
Yeah.
Or was tricked into fucking one of the ninjas, depending on what storyline. And they made, like, a super ninja child.
Super
who
ninjas.
Needs a lot of therapy.
Wait, which character is that?
Damien.
Oh, man, I haven't read much of that. But I will say I'm not a huge Batman fan. Yeah. I grew up watching the animated series, mm-hmm. and I read like The Killing Joke. That's about it. He was never my favorite, so
that's fair.
I'll take him over Superman any day.
That's fair. I'm also just not big into a lot of the big DC characters.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Anyway. Off topic.
So the reason I wanted to talk about this is hopefully by understanding media language, we can better understand what messages are being said, understand where the gaps in the media exist, and hopefully how to build and engage with better narratives going forward. Because I love World of Darkness. Obviously, I do this fucking show. But there's also portions of it that are problematic as fuck. And I understand there's a lot of people that were trying, and there's probably some people that weren't trying. Or, you know. Yeah. He a little confused, but he got the spirit. That kind of shit.
Yeah.
And also, I think we've talked about, but a lot of these books are 30 years-ish old. Mm-hmm. Our access to information is quite different. Mm-hmm. A lot of times when these books were being written, even if they did try, it was whatever your local bookstore had on the topic, and you just kind of had to accept that as fact.
Yeah, and like...
Where now we have a lot more access to a global perspective.
Yeah, and I'll even own trying to just write the bonus episode with the ideas that I wanted to go with this initially. Trying to find good, like, well-sourced, well-explained sources for base shit about various parts of, like, Desi and Punjabi and other Southeast Asian cultures is a fucking nightmare. Because there's just this thick wall of hippie bullshit that you have to dig through, where it's just somebody's crunchy granola mom who, like, read Eat, Pray, Love, maybe had gone on a backpacking trip to Delhi years ago, and has got this, like, fucking fascination with this culture in a way that's not like a, hey, I enjoyed this, I like the color, like, I love, like, different aspects of the food culture, I enjoy, like, it's not a respectful enjoyment, it's just kind of a...
Like a performative enjoyment?
It's a performative, sometimes it reads to me, it's like, you like, the Disney adult version of, like, I'm putting on the skin of this because I am too afraid to form my own personality, so I've made this my thing.
Hmm.
And I think making somebody's homeland your thing is weird. And yeah, so just trying to dig through all that shit, and maybe I'm slightly, I'll own some of my bias on the, it slightly grinds my gears, because I experience a very small portion of that, just being a Scottish person from the UK moving to the US, and just the weird amount of Americans that come up to me and feel the need to corner me and talk to me about their trip to fucking Ireland, and like how their great-grandparents escaped the potato famine and shit, and I'm like, I don't know you.
And I don't give a shit about your grandparents.
I'm like, I'm cool. I'm just like, I'm glad you had a good holiday in Dublin. That's cool. I don't know why you need to tell me, like, I'm some sort of ancestry priest. Like, well, I'm going to absolve your sins.
Because the Scottish people like leprechauns too, duh.
And I'm like, they're not even the same fucking island. Like, Jesus, Jesus fuck Christ.
That's one of my favorite things that I have learned in more recent times is, like, Americans fucking love leprechauns, but in Ireland, they're like, why you guys talk about leprechauns all the time? We don't really fucking care. I mean, they're there. They're not completely made up by Westerners, but that's like a very little, like, side folklore that just, like, blew up in America.
Yeah. Because it makes little mascots, because, like, look at this little guy.
But that's also, it's also an interesting culture exchange, because now we have St. Patrick's Day stuff here that's way different than it is there. But also, yeah, they adopted Halloween there, and then they loved Halloween so much that now that they're trying to claim Halloween as an Irish tradition,
which
is fair because they're combining it with other older traditions,
well,
there's
also,
but it's become like a weird mashup of the two cultures.
Yeah, well, there's also some Halloween traditions from Ireland and some parts of Scotland that the Americans absconded with initially, and then we just made what the fuck we do for Halloween now, and it's just like circled back. Because jack-o'-lanterns were originally turnips.
Yep.
Yep. I've carved that. It sucks.
Weren't they more just traditionally any root vegetable? Or was it specifically turnips? Because I'd heard it was like pretty much any, like...
You could grab any root vegetable. We always just did turnips.
So it could be a potato?
Just the neeps were bigger than the potatoes.
Yeah, but could you? I would carve a potato.
See, I thought Halloween had more of a directly Scottish history, and then it kind of came here. Yeah. And then Ireland kind of picked up on it.
No, it's like Scotch-Irish. There's just
is
like,
it?
There's
okay.
There's a lot of bleed between the two, and we just don't talk about it. Don't worry about it, guys. It's just, Because, yeah, I've also had the problem.
Sometimes you have to leave your village to find a mate.
You do. You need to fucking go somewhere else. But, yeah, I've also had the problems of, because I've spent so much time in the States going back home and then talking to people about things. And then they're just like, oh, yeah, the American over here with the big opinions. And no matter what you say, you're fucking wrong. And I'm like, that literally physically cannot be true. Quit fucking with me. It's very annoying.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, God. It's like, I just wanted to buy a fucking soda. I just wanted to buy an iron brew, but apparently I can't buy an iron brew at this store because I happen to be in England visiting family and I have a Bank of Scotland note and this guy is racist as fuck. I've had that happen twice.
Huh.
It's very stupid. So yeah, huh. There's that. So it's, and this just, yeah, and with the deluge of the internet talking, especially because of Dune dropping, I'm glad people are excited for Dune. I was a Dune kid growing up. I did not have a lot of friends.
I will own I tried to read the first book, yeah, and it was a terrible experience, and I kind of lost all interest in the in anything related to it.
I
like the David Lynch movie, but...
Yeah, I don't blame anybody for having the issues with Dune like I had with Lord of the Rings, where, like, the story is really cool, I love the story. Fuck reading this book, though.
It's kind of how I felt about Game of Thrones, too.
Yeah, story's like, great. God, fucking reading this, though. Jeez,
it's like, cool. I also don't need to read the 12-page description of a dinner table. Yeah. Like,
yeah, but there is a lot of Orientalist things in the novel, but there's also just a lot of people seeing things they don't like and just calling it Orientalist, but they've not read the books, they've not seen the movie, they've not done any reading on what Orientalism actually is and how it affects various groups and cultures, and then they're just saying things to people and being mean, and I'm like, I appreciate you trying to be a good person, but screaming at people online to get woke cookie points because you're so cool.
You're driving the people in the wrong direction.
Yeah, just like, that. I'm an ally. I know you guys can't see me doing, like, the fist. It's like, look at me, I'm so good. Look at me, I'm so good. And I'm just like, are you, though? Like, I don't care if you don't like the thing. That's fine if you don't like the thing and if you have problems with the thing. Actually know what the fuck you're talking about and why you're mad at it and why you don't like it.
I'm very... anti-social media in general, but it has led me to a point where if I see someone, especially a white person, who is self-identifying as an ally, I immediately trust them less.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, who are you trying to prove this to?
Right. It's like, I'm one of the good ones. I'm like, don't say that. Just don't be that person. Don't be that guy.
You can just chill.
Yeah.
And be normal.
Yeah, and there's also, you can just chill and be normal. You could... Just smash cut to that meme from the little boy from the Babadook just screaming. But you can also consume media that is problematic and understand that the goals and the point of the media was good intentioned. It was, unfortunately, for Frank Herbert, written in the fucking 60s. So there's some weird Orientalist things as well as some weird, like, sex politics, gendered politics things as well. But the overall narrative of being like, hey guys, imperialism and savior complexes are bad. And eugenics is bad.
It's weird how we keep having to say that.
I know. Right? I was like, guys, you can just... I hate to be the grill-pilled, like, let's just let people enjoy things. It's also like, you guys can take media that is problematic that people are excited about and use it as, like, a doorway to express things that
right.
are more positive and helpful and... Hopefully be like, hey, friends that are from these peoples that the book is referencing, do you want to, like, talk about your take on this and what you would change? And maybe we can just, like, hang out and learn some things and, like, get a plate of hummus and just chill.
That's kind of what I was trying yeah. to poke at early in the episode, too. Is
yeah.
You need to start the conversations because if you don't know why it's a problem,
yeah.
then you're probably being a problem by yelling about it.
Yeah, exactly. So, in an attempt to not be three white people talking over... other people's
yeah.
cultures. I have a small list of articles that I found online that I read that were like, these are kind of neat. You should check them out. I'll try to remember to post the links in the Discord when this episode comes out.
Yeah.
If I forget, tag me.
Hit us up.
I'm stupid. Please tag me. All right. So the list I have is Frank Herbert's Dune and Orientalism by Haifa Mahabri. There's also the film Dune, Techno-Orientalism and Intergalactic Islam by Ibrahim Al-Marashi. We also have Orientalism and India by Jukka Joki. That one is actually an academic paper. It's a little dense, but it's good. There's also Why Are Kids Movies Obsessed with Orientalism by Daniela Razouk. And then Orientalism Writes Back, Discourse of quote-unquote Chinese disseminationalism in transnational martial arts films by Xiao Yi Chan. That one was cool.
That has a good title.
Yeah. yeah. He talks about Kung Fu Hustle in it. It's fantastic.
Very good.
Hell yeah.
So that's also an academic paper. So hopefully it's not paywalled for you if you look for it. It might be. I'm currently in college right now and I'm abusing the shit out of my library.
I've also heard the addendum that if you can't get something behind a paywall, try sending the author an email.
Mm-hmm.
They either probably know a better way to access the article or might just share it with you, because usually people who write things want people to read them, strangely mm-hmm. enough.
What?
Oh, wild. God. Imagine Chad, poor Chad, just like chilling, and then just a bunch of weird goths show up being like, hey, I heard this article was cool. Can I
see that?
Can I see it?
I was listening to this podcast about vampires. And
I gotta check it out.
So, yeah. So, thoughts on Orientalism and the Third Eye and Talon and Salubri. And...
I had a question.
Yoke.
That we kind of moved past.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. This conversation naturally flowed past it, but I wanted to bring it up just mm-hmm. more VTM based. But yeah. So if learning Valerian and Obeya was what gave you a third eye
mm-hmm.
in older editions, do you know if, say, like, I was playing a Gangrel,
mm-hmm.
but I had a Salubri buddy mm-hmm. and they taught me Obeya and I hit that second dot, would the Gangrel develop
yes.
that eye?
Yep.
Okay, so you could have had non-salubris with third eyes in older editions.
Yep.
Interesting. Huh. I kind of like that.
Yeah, which is interesting, and it also, depending on how you wanted to have your group work together, you could just have the salubri teach people just enough so that everybody in the group had third eye, and you're like, guess which one? Hidden salubri.
I also...
Good luck.
I also like the idea, because one thing we've talked about on this show is our annoyance with some of the amalgams, mm-hmm. and, like, technically you can take some of those amalgam powers if you're from a different clan, even though they're, like, the Zamit's powers, for example, mm-hmm. And having some kind of barrier, I think it would be fun if you're like, sure, learn that Salubri power. Uh-oh. And
yeah.
still have that.
Yeah.
You still take those abilities, because I think the lowest one is, like, two or three dots.
Yeah.
So I think just you take that, and all of a sudden it's like, uh-oh. Maybe an ask your player about it thing, but...
Yeah, that would just be like a, hey, do you want to explore this as an option for your character? Because I think it'd be pretty nifty.
But there might be a downside to it.
But there's going to be a downside. Are you cool with it?
I think that could be really fun.
That could be
mm-hmm.
super fun.
Mm-hmm.
Hell yeah.
How do you explain to the other Gangrel where that eye came from? You know mm-hmm. what I mean?
Just say that you're...
Your Zamitzi friend had an idea, and you thought you'd try out the aesthetic.
There's that. There's also just the Gangrel in older editions, as they were getting more powerful, they would kind of, like, those early stages of Animorphs transformation mm-hmm. covers start, like, pushing into an animal of some sort, and their animal just could be some sort of bug.
Yeah.
Because some bugs just have extra eyes in places. True.
It also notes that I think we kind of skipped over it, but that third eye isn't always human.
No, yeah, that was a note. I'm sorry, I skipped over that. Yeah, so in the Valerian, so the Dark Ages, has a descriptor note, and I thought this was really cool. I'm sorry, I skipped over this earlier. If you had a higher humanity, the eye would look like a normal human eye, or could possibly look angelic, whatever the fuck that means.
It means it's got rings of eyes inside of the eye.
Eyes on eyes on eyes.
I was thinking, or just like pure milky, like white,
yeah.
even.
Maybe looks like a galaxy cluster cloud. I don't know. Cool space thing.
You have gold rings.
Turn up the blue ratio on David Bowie's eye.
Yeah. Fucking, it could be gold.
Ooh.
Or silver, metallic. I don't know. Iridescent. I don't fucking know. You flavor that how you want.
It's like a light show at a rave.
And if you have a lower humanity, it would look either fucked up or demonic. However you want to parse those two phrases.
So just fucked up like milky, as in like it's starting to like get cataracts blindness, things
like
that.
Jaundice, could have blood crackles. The eye could just start to like smoosh and become like goat.
Mm-hmm.
Or cuttlefish. I don't know.
Right.
You got a load of options.
It starts segmenting.
Mm-hmm.
It also specifically
get a big fly eyeball.
It also specifically says in the quote, the third eye is not always recognized as human, and rumors persist of vertical, serpentine pupils, or even worm-like eye spots.
Oh, that's for V5?
Yeah, that is in V5,
yeah.
But I'm just saying that still...
That still carries on over into current day.
That's cool.
So they don't have to be...
The third eye doesn't have to be, like, a repeat of your true normal eyes if you want to have a special eye.
Which, if I'm going to have a third eye, it's you might as well cool-ass weird eye.
Bring on the Ritz.
Yeah, get a Zimitzi to give you a brow ridge. Mm-hmm.
Could you imagine a Salubri? He got his orbital socket in his forehead, and they're into piercing, so not only do they have their normal brows pierced, they have a brow piercing on their third orbital socket.
Yes. And their bridge pierced.
Yeah, just so much metal.
Going all around. I like it.
Just chains connecting all sorts of things. Just...
I was about to say, actually, if they put chains connecting those, it would kind of show up as their clan symbol.
Kind of, yeah.
Oh, yeah, true.
That could be kind of cool.
Be kind of neat.
Also, you could just have a villain Salubri that's doing that, and they're just like, ah, yes, I'm being very symbolic and religious, and the players see that, and they're just very like, what? Are you a fucking dork?
Yeah, right? What is all that?
You were trying so hard.
I like the idea that they don't normally do that, but they get that done to reveal themselves at, like, Elysium in front of the prince, just to, like, intimidate him a little bit, just be like...
Just a full Lady Jessica get up.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Love it.
Sorry, guys. I'm also really excited to see Dune Part 2, because... It's a big sci-fi franchise that I've really, really enjoyed a lot. And this current iteration, I feel like, is doing a fairly good job so far. And all the clips I've seen of the next bit look pretty solid.
Yes.
So I'm hyped.
Yes.
Also, Lady Jessica could not serve cunt any harder. Any harder. Jesus Christ.
I have done my usual in looking at as little as possible.
Yeah.
So I've seen almost nothing from ads or anything
like that. Oh, that's fair. I respect that. It kind of fortuitously came out that we were doing the Salubri episodes around when this film came out, and I'm just like looking at all the shit going,
gotta do it.
Oh, there's just a lot of nice parallels. Because I feel like if you wanted to be a very ambitious storyteller, you could technically... Have an antagonist in your story, just be Muad'Dib, don't tell the players, just run the plot of Dune in the background and see how long until they catch.
Hell yeah. I'm also real excited. I know I was talking shit on Dune, but I'm probably a more annoying kind of nerd, because the director said he's probably not going to do a third one.
Okay.
Specifically because he's trying to do Arthur C. Clarke adaption that's not 2001.
Which one?
He's trying to do Rendezvous at Rama.
Yes.
And I love some Arthur C. Clarke as a kid. So I was just the annoying, like, science fiction should be scientific kind of middle schooler.
That's fair. Well, as somebody who has to Philip K. Dick check themselves, I've been gaslit a lot. That's what I'm saying.
Oh no! I thought you were saying you had aliens speaking to you.
I wish.
After a lead poisoning incident.
Yeah. No. Things sometimes happen, and I have to be like, did I actually have a feeling over that? Is that real? Hey guys. I'm having a problem. I'm presenting problem to friend. Am I crazy? Am I out of pocket? That's me, Phil K. Dick, checking myself.
Hey, I do that.
Yeah. I was like, am I out of pocket? Is this weird? Okay, cool. Don't worry about it, guys. It's fine.
I feel like we're rambling. We should probably leave.
But first,
I got a question. What was that one movie it was a spoof on kung fu movies?
Enter the Fist?
No. Maybe?
Kung Fu Hustle? There's a lot of spoofs. You gotta narrow it down a bit.
They had the gopher nunchucks.
Yeah, that was Enter the Fist.
Okay, was it?
Kung Pao. Yeah, Kung Pao.
Cool, Enter the thank
Fist.
You.
Yeah, I did not enjoy that one.
No, not really.
But I think it's because
some very good scenes.
Yeah.
But...
Like I loved that movie when I was like 13, but I'm sure it does not hold up.
No. Yeah. The fight choreography was good. Everything else, I was like, eh. But I also watched Kung Fu Hustle before seeing Kung Pao, so that might have been part of the problem.
Do you know,
the bar was set really high.
Okay, we're rambling again, but I'm pretty sure that Kung Pao, the main actor and director, was also the guy who did the Thumb movies, like Thumb Wars and Bat
that.
Thumb.
I absolutely
Steve
believe
Odekirk.
That.
I wouldn't be surprised, and also you've been torturing us with those fucking Thumb movies for
it
about
is.
A decade now.
It's my
well,
fault.
John keeps buying them for me, and
John!
So
I keep finding them.
Yep, he worked on Kung Pao, Barnyard, Ace Ventura, and the Thumb movies.
I think you have all of them now, right? All the Thumb movies?
I don't know how many there are to know if I have them all. I know I don't have one I almost had to buy myself, because I've almost completed my Blair Witch collection, but there is a Blair Thumb.
Oh my god, that's funny.
I would only be willing to watch The Blair Thumb under the auspices that we're doing a movie night and we're going to actually watch The Blair Witch Project afterwards.
I have all
or Book of Shadows.
I have all the documentaries for the first two movies. I have a bootleg of the TV series that they did instead of Blair Witch 2, which isn't related, but it's a better sequel to the original Blair Witch thematically. And I believe I have the PC game now, so we could do all of of the Blair Witch lore. Oh,
I haven't seen anything past the first one, so I'd be super down to sit and have a movie night.
The second movie is really goofy because they took, basically from my understanding, they wanted more time to do it because they got offered a TV show on Fox. The network was like, no, fuck you, do it in a year. And when they said no, they said, all right, fired all the original crew and just made their own based on like a rough script, I think, that they had at the time. And then they went on to do the TV show called Freaky Links, which used a lot more of the like the meta horror. Like, it had a website that updated alongside the show with like blog posts and stuff. Really fucking cool show. I'll do a bonus episode about it someday if people want. And then the new version, they helped write, but it's a new director and new crew, but they have a returning cast and stuff. A couple.
Gotcha. Okay.
I think there's like one or two returning. I'll have to watch it again, actually, because I know one of the characters is supposed to be the main girl's brother.
Yeah.
But I don't think they actually had any of the original cast back. I think I'll have to watch it again. But
we're rambling a third time.
I'm going to edit some of this out. Thanks, Paralyzed, for the music.
No, leave it in. They need to see all three of our eyes.
Thanks, Paralyzed, for the music.
We appreciate you. We do have social medias. I run the TikTok as long as the government doesn't ban it. Because, of course, the only thing the 500 representatives we have in our federal government can fucking agree on is apparently we need to ban this app that does the exact same bullshit all the other apps do. Anyways, I'm on there. Blank Buddy's TikTok. And then we got Skippo handling the Instagram.
Sometimes Hunter.
Sometimes Hunter.
Sometimes me.
John has been working on doing streams on our YouTube channel.
Yeah. Doing them Sunday afternoons, I believe.
Yeah, I've been kind of, I think I'm going to push it back a little bit. Try Sunday closer to like 5-ish.
Okay, that's not bad. For
a couple hours hanging out. I either do crafting or video games. I tried to do a video game last time. Did not work out.
We're working out the kinks.
We figured it out. But yeah, I think this week I might be doing a crafting stream. So
hell yeah.
Come hang out.
So get that. Please come hang out. Speaking of hanging out, we also have a Discord with the community. People there are cool and organizing games and working on lore together and building character stuff and sharing cool animal pictures because people have cool pets.
Games. Did you mention games?
Yeah, people have been organizing games. Like, there was a mage game for a while. I think that, is that still happening?
I have no idea.
Yeah, there was a mage game that just suddenly sprung up. There's been people playing VTMs, people have been playing Deadlands.
I'm about to play some Fallout.
Yeah, there's a Fallout. It's not the official Fallout. It is a Fallout homebrew using Savage Worlds, which is cool.
Yeah.
It's cool as fuck.
Brian put that together.
Yeah. Thanks. But yeah, that, if you go to blankbodies.com, that'll take you to our link tree. That info is in there. If you think we are cool and doing stuff that you want us to do more of, we do have a Patreon if you want to support us with a couple of dollar dues. The different tiers give you different title thingies in the Discord, as well as helping us direct how the show is running with polls. And there's things where I'll do character sketches for folks. We appreciate the support as helping us build things so hopefully we can expand the Blank Bodies project, including if we can get to $500 goddamn dollars a month. We'll do 4 episodes a month, and I'll do the fucking milk episode.
Milk.
The milk episode.
Oh, God.
And not only will you be supporting our show, but you will also get a bonus patron episode every month, which means you will be getting 4 episodes a month anyway.
Hoo-hoo-hoo. Yeah. 5 episodes for you.
If we get to 500, 5 episodes.
Yeah.
5 for 5. $5 foot long.
It'll help us buy research projects so we can continue to do like more in-depth episodes like this.
Yes.
Which seems to be what people really want, so.
Yeah.
You excited to do a demon episode now that I have the book?
Yes.
Cool.
I'm cool to do more demon shit if people want.
I expected more pushback on that.
Hi, guys. The weird extra research we do for the show, I do actually go and buy these books. They're on my shelf. So, yeah, I have a copy of, I did an audio version of Orientalism, because the book I ordered was taking too long to ship, so I said, fuck it, and I power sped through an audiobook. I don't recommend that.
Yeah, I'm probably going to have to get some books for Werewolf, so.
So,
We love you.
We love you. We're trying to do cool stuff. Take care of yourselves.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Mwah! Excuse me, that was rude of me. I don't want to leave things like that with you. I apologize, listeners. There you go. You get a double.